Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is an empowering hour coming at you. We're going to have part two of Dr. Charles Hoff. This is just a regular board-certified family physician who also has a passion for science. And he began to look at all the statistics and all the studies and the peer-reviewed literature, and he said, something's not adding up. You know, what we're being told about COVID doesn't match the actual science. So a lot of the procedures that we're going through, like lockdowns, social distancing, etc., they are not helping the situation. We're going to see part two of this plain-spoken person telling the truth, risking his career for we the people. Because the New York Times, CNN, they're not telling us the truth, nor is anyone in the federal agencies. We're also going to have a class in philosophy. How do we get to a point where we are tearing each other apart? This is not a good time. It is a challenging time. Identity politics, woke culture, the white fragility, D'Angelo's terrible book, college professors not willing to teach the way they should, critical thinking, but are rather allowing the students to determine the degree to which the student wants to be given information in some institutions, not all, and how any word, any phrase could trip them into some kind of fear position. Well, look at how fractured we are. We should be unified. We should be rejoicing in the fact that we're more knowledgeable today than ever before about how to live a longer and healthier life, yet we're living a shorter life. Why? This clip will help us define that. Also, not me saying it, rather a reporter telling you why you should question anything that is being said as a certainty in science about the vaccines, the test, the safety, the efficacy, because they're going to show you one company's background. It is putrid. So why in the world would a serial offender be trusted today? You mean they're starting all over? Today we're honest about everything. Today, we're going to tell you the absolute truth, no lies. Yeah. Good luck with that. So we're going to hear that. But we always begin with the latest on health, and I'm going to do a shorter health and a little longer on protein today. For example, our first study comes on a study about inflammatory markers and muscle damage in sports performance, and especially in people who had not been that active. And one ingredient, curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, and what we'll do. This was done at the University, Federal University in Brazil. Now we all know, at least those of us who are long distance runners and athletes and stay in shape all the time, that you're always producing free radicals. Free radicals in turn damage cells. Now most people are not aware of this, but of the trillions and tens of trillions of cells we have in the body, each and every one of those cells is altered about 10,000 times per day. Think of the math. Let's just say 50 trillion times 10,000. Why? Well, that's relatively simple. Things that are inflammatory. What's inflammatory? Well, how about excessive exercise? What I've been doing. That means that you're creating far more free radicals than you normally would with what is known as oxidative stress. Okay, but can I counterbalance that? Can I compensate? Absolutely. So that's why I suggest before you go out for a workout, you take certain nutrients that are known to trap large quantities of free radicals, because the free radicals can also lead to other inflammatory agents, which are even worse. The interferons and interleukins, and these really damage the cell. And over a period of time, you get inflammation, and then you get swelling, and then you get all kinds of problems, joints, etc. Now, you can have this without feeling it. You can have inflammation in your brain, inflammation in your heart, in your blood vessels, in your liver, in your kidneys, and you wouldn't feel it. You generally fill it, well, let's say if you have purines and lactic acid buildup after eating meat in the fingers, the toes, it's called gout. And historically, like in France, the king had gout. Why? Because the king ate sweetmeats a lot, as they did also in England. Sweetmeats are brain, kidney, very high in protein, very, very toxic. So then they were told, well, just pour pigeon blood. So they got all the pigeons and they would drain the blood out of the pigeons and then they'd pour this over the swollen feet. It didn't do any good, killed all the birds. And they wouldn't give up the meat and sugar also. You take a combination of meat and sugar together, a deadly combination for the body. So imagine exercising and you're vegan. You're still creating a lot of free radicals by taking vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, coenzyme Q10, magnesium, glutathione. Before you exercise, you're automatically compensating. So as you create the free radicals by the deep breathing, oxidative stress, oxygen in, carbon dioxide out, that exchange creates oxidative stress. Now this is normal. And the body can normally handle it, but not when you're smoking, and not when you're drinking, and not when you're eating garbage, because then you create a massive amount of free radical damage. And that leads to inflammation all over the body. And that can lead to cancers that normally, that we're all producing, you're all producing cancer cells, but the body immediately tags them, and through a process that includes different anti-cancer agents, they can trap the cancer and dissolve it enzymatically, kill it. But let's just say we're not feeding the immune system, we're not helping the immune system, we're creating massive antioxidant damage in front of a computer, on a cell phone, the damage to our neck, our brain, our skull from the electromagnetic forces. That's cumulative. I just counseled a person yesterday that spent the last 14 years working in a media company, watching monitors, electromagnetic pulses coming from 100 screens, bombarding this person's body, every cell in the body, and then having the towers outside, the satellite dishes that bring in the signals, that also is bringing in a massive amount of electroconvulsive therapy. And then they're working the night shift. So imagine the damage directly from the electromagnetic appliances in front of them, your screens, the blue lights, then the big satellite dishes. It's like living right across the street from an overhead power line. Dangerous. And then working night shift, where you're not secreting adequate melatonin from the brain, the pineal gland, that protects your body. It's a major antioxidant. So you got a triple negative. You can just mark off maybe 10 to 15 years of your lifespan just from that. Now, can you get it back? Yes. But boy, that takes effort. You got to be really methodical. Most people aren't. Most people, I feel okay. I remember my brother, we had a discussion one night down in Texas in 1993. He was coughing. And I said, Howard, we got to take you in tomorrow to get this checked. No, I'm all right. I'm all right. Howard, you're not all right. The body is trying to help you breathe and it's expelling this mucus. Now, there's something going wrong with your lungs. Let's go get a check. He refused to. 3 months, he wouldn't go get a check. When he finally did, he had massive lung cancer, terminal. And he'd been smoking 4-pack cigarettes a day. But in his mind, well, I'm 60 years old. I don't have a thing wrong with me. And, so it's not hurting me. I said, Howard, you don't know how many people like you ended up with emphysema or cancer or heart disease or heart attack. And it wasn't listed as smoking. It was listed as a heart attack or emphysema, not smoking. So you don't know the numbers. Anyhow, I helped him and they said it couldn't be reversed. I reversed it. But boy, that was a painful night. I mean, I was up all night. So understand something. Your body can only do what you allow it to do, and the more things you take in that helps it, the more help it's going to get, and the more you're going to be able to withstand problems. It's that simple. It's not complicated at that level. It's not complicated if we made a list of all the things causing inflammation. Excess exercise, SX stress more than anything, excess work, physical work, our diet, alcohol, caffeine, all these cause a lot of free radicals. So we want to stop that. By being a healthy vegan, just a healthy vegan, you can eliminate half of that, 10,000 to 5,000, more or less. By exercising intelligently and compensating before the exercise and after the exercising, taking your branched chain amino acids after you get back, taking more vitamin C and quercetin when you get back. Quercetin is great, by the way, helping for post-recovery. But now, according to this study from the Federal University in Brazil, by taking curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, I would say between 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams, you're helping turn off the inflammation. You're helping reduce muscle damage. Yeah. So that's a big deal for all of you who are out there and feel great. Mind you, the exercise is lowering your pulse rate, and every organ in your body has a biological clock. And no two clocks are all the same because we don't age all at the same. If you smoke, your lungs, your heart are going to, and your eyes are going to age faster. If you drink alcohol, your liver and kidneys and heart are going to age faster in your brain. What if you drink and smoke? Did you ever see a movie from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s where someone wasn't smoking and drinking? You never saw a movie where John Wayne was sitting there and says, I'm having a sprout salad. Want to join me? Well, I got some carrot juice here. No, no, they were throwing back something that made him gag, but they tolerated it. Remember that look? They did. Well, why didn't they drink turpentine? You know, the same effect. We've lived through a lot of stupid. I mean, really stupid. But we're still doing it. Now, yeah, the average person knows if you drink and smoke, you're going to kill yourself faster than not. But think how many people still smoke or still drink. How many people eat sugar and saturated fats and pizzas and hamburgers and hot dogs and french fries. It's all killing us. So that's why I'm suggesting go to a plant-based diet. And you're going to find a lot of things improve. First, by exercising every day, you're going to have a lower heart rate, resting heart rate. You want to get it down into the 60s. If you're now at 80 and you get in the 60s, you could possibly, you have your heart live an additional 10 to 15 years. That's big. That's important. Your lungs are going to live longer. You're going to have a lower body mass index. You're going to have less fat. You want to be lean and strong. You'll live longer. You're going to have lower blood sugar and lower blood pressure, all other things equal. You're going to have better digestion. You're going to have more flexibility. Your brain's going to think better because exercise increases oxygenation and circulation of the brain. So when you take that juice in the morning, instead of having coffee, which is highly anabolic and cause GERD and all kinds of problems, and it can cause you to lose the value of the vitamins. I actually know people that were taking vitamins with coffee. And I couldn't figure out, I'm looking at their blood work up and I'm saying, something doesn't register. You're telling me you take all these supplements and I'm not seeing you have these in your blood. You're deficient. No, I take them every day, every day. How do you take them? Every day I get up and I have my coffee and I take my vitamins. But the coffee has caffeine, which is a diuretic. It'll wash out the vitamins. Oh, I didn't know. Most people don't know these things. So by going vegan, there's certain things we can do that will help us. One, more quality fiber. That helps lower overall cholesterol and blood pressure and blood sugar. Two, with a healthy plant-based diet, you're getting far more phytonutrients and antioxidants, which then grab the free radicals. Every glass of juice you have, let's say you had a pomegranate grape juice. That's a great juice, by the way. Just take one whole pomegranate, juice it, and then take some grapes, juice them. If you don't have the pomegranate, you don't have the grapes, then get organic concentrate and have that. Your body is flooded with antioxidants. That's going to help every organ in your body, and it's going to trap all these free radicals. And therefore, instead of having, let's say, 5,000 gene alterations per day, per cell, you might go down to 3. Then start taking those known anti-inflammatories, vitamin C, quercetin, curcumin, black cumin seed oil, vitamin E. Those are your superstars, the 5 superstars. Because they can circulate, and alpha-lipoic acid, they can circulate many times around the body, and they're just grabbing all these free radicals. I don't want to go through the technical aspect of an unpaired electron in its outer orbit. That's nonsense. All you have to know is this is a free radical. This is an antioxidant. Attach, neutralize. All right? Much like when I wear my, as I do every time I go out, by the way, I wear my little neck ionizer, and it's throwing off ions, millions of ions, constantly, in about a 12-inch barrier around my face. So someone in my airspace, it's going to trap those free radicals. It can trap a lot of different ones, molds, danders, bacteria, and neutralize them so they don't get into my body. Again, it's a simple little device, but it protects my lungs. Vitamin C is inexpensive. It protects my body. Juicing protects you. But the average person is not drinking fresh-made celery, cucumber, lemon, and green apple in the morning to alkalize, to help flush out the lactic acid. I did a 28-day clinical study. I've done 50 clinical studies with tens of thousands of people. And this clinical study, it was only 28 days long. You couldn't get into the study unless you had medically diagnosed, under treatment by a rheumatologist, arthritis for at least 2 years. The average was 7. The first week was the elimination program. Let's start getting rid of all this stuff. Now, normally I would say take much longer, but this was a clinical study and I wanted to purge everything out of the body. So I had to give them a protocol to help them get all these toxins out and pro-inflammatory cytokines out, turn off the inflammatory storms all over their joints and muscles. And then the second week was rebuilding, detoxification, then rebuild, rejuvenate. Third week was rejuvenation. And then the fourth week was an acceleration. They were on 13 glasses of fresh organic juice a day, plus all told, I'm guessing about 20 fruits and vegetables they were consuming a day, about 13 servings of fruits and vegetables. And all their protein came from nuts and seeds, legumes and grains, beans, where you get all the protein you need. You don't get excess, but you get enough, and that's great for the body. And then suddenly, we filmed it, and we're getting that film ready, the before and after, so you can actually see for yourself, because I film all my studies. You'll see someone who can't walk up the steps at the Anti-Aging Center on 92nd Street. We don't have it now, but I did then. That's where I did one of my last studies. And a person who said that it took him 15 minutes to walk up the steps, one step at a time, then it stopped, step and stop. They said today, 28 days later, quote, I bounded up the steps without my cane. I ran down 92nd Street Hill, a steep hill that used to take me 15 to 20 minutes. I ran down in about 2 minutes. He said, I've never felt this good in my adult life. I have no pain. Okay. That's one person. You can say, well, that's an anomaly. So what? No, everyone in the class. So what? So we confirmed it. The first study ever of its kind done in science that I'm aware of in the United States, showing that diet, lifestyle, exercise, and stress reduction. By the way, that was what we did the fourth week, stress reduction, because stress alone can cause inflammation in your joints. So we did it. And I wrote it up, published an article on it, and then I guess it was forgotten. That's what happens so often with even good science is forgotten or not read. But this, I'm telling you, can make a difference. People's digestion improved, gas, bloating, indigestion gone, transit time between eating and evacuating increased, cholesterol down, blood pressure down, blood sugar down, pain gone. And their doctors took them off their medications. It was very, this is all medically supervised, And they had to have their doctor's permission to start it. And they had to have their doctor's permission for their doctor to wean them off their medications, which they were able to do. And some of those medications had terrible side effects, including death from bleeding. So that's our classroom on the air for today. I want to give you the larger overview, but give you some specifics about why it's so important to transcend the limitations of complacency and comfort with your old way, where you're killing yourself with your knife and your fork. We can rejuvenate. We can heal. We can reverse so much of our aging process. All it takes is commitment. And the articles to help you do this, free, as a public service, are posted on GaryNall.com. All right? We're going to go to a break now. And when we come back from the break, we're going directly into two clips. They're both short. The first one is an independent investigative journalist looked at Pfizer's background, and all they're doing is reporting on court record outcomes. This is not an opinion piece. So you have to ask yourself, if a corporation had this kind of history, why should we trust that they would give us the truth and be transparent in everything going on today concerning the safety and efficacy of their vaccines? All right? You can decide for yourself. But then we're going to go directly from that into Dr. Hoff. And just remember, Dr. Hoff has no controversy in his background. He helps a lot of people, a lot of patients. And he came forward because he saw the talking head doctors and scientists who were on television telling everybody, get your booster, get your two vaccines. And what you had to do to stay within the protocols, he said they were not practicing medicine. He's a doctor practicing medicine. He's in the front line. So we felt it was important to honor Lewis Hills, the founder of Pacifica's mission to provide a voice for the voiceless. So this forum will be allowed for those who have credibility, who we've validated what they've said, and we believe that you should have a chance to hear what they have to say. You can accept or reject it. That's up to you. I'll simply provide voices that you would not otherwise know exist, who have good science, good medicine backgrounds, who are all pro-vaccine, by the way, who will say they've given themselves, their family, their patients vaccines, but they question the efficacy and safety of this one. And I think on your behalf, you should know completely the pros and cons of what you're putting into your body before you do that. That just is your freedom of choice to be well-informed. Now to a break, and we'll come right back into those two clips.
Pfizer received the biggest criminal fine in U.S. history as part of a $2.3 billion settlement with federal prosecutors for mispromoting medicines and for paying kickbacks to compliant doctors. Pfizer pleaded guilty to misbranding the painkiller Bextra by promoting the drug for uses that were not approved by medical regulators. In the 90s, they were involved in defective heart valves that led to the deaths of more than 100 people. The company had deliberately misled regulators about the hazards. The company agreed to pay $10.75 million to settle Justice Department charges. In 2004, Pfizer's subsidiary agreed to pay $430 million to resolve criminal charges that it paid physicians to prescribe its epilepsy drug, Neurontin, to patients with ailments for which the medication was not approved. In 2010, a federal jury found that Pfizer committed racketeering fraud in its marketing of the drug. Pfizer disclosed that during a six-month period the previous year, it had paid $20 million to some 4,500 doctors and other medical professionals for speaking on the company's behalf. In 2012, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission announced that it had reached a $45 million settlement with Pfizer to resolve charges that its subsidiaries had bribed overseas doctors and other healthcare professionals to increase foreign sales. Pfizer was sued in a U.S. federal court by Nigerian families who accused the company of testing a dangerous new antibiotic called Trovan on children without parents' consent and using their children as human guinea pigs. A panel of medical experts concluded that Pfizer had violated international law, and the company agreed to pay $75 million to settle the lawsuits in Nigerian courts. The US case was settled for an undisclosed amount. The list goes on. I don't want to bore you with it. But ask yourself, if it was a car manufacturer, would you buy a car from them?
A patient came into our emergency room, and this patient was quite unwell. This lady had had her COVID shot about a week before, and she had terrible headaches and abdominal pains and nausea and vomiting and fever, and she was quite worried. Because she had COVID 5 weeks before, and her only symptoms were fatigue and loss of appetite for 10 days. And now she had this COVID shot and was way more sick from her COVID shot than she'd been from COVID. So she thought something must be seriously wrong. Why did the shot make her more sick than COVID? So I was on call for the emergency room, and the emergency room nurse phoned me. I was at home having dinner with some friends. And I said to the nurse, yes, I know that patient. I've been her family doctor for 28 years. She had a COVID infection 5 weeks ago. Please, will you tell her that she doesn't need her second shot? And I explained to the emergency room nurse the research study that was done in Singapore last year, where they investigated natural immunity after the first SARS virus and found that natural immunity against a SARS virus lasts at least 18 years and is broad enough to cover every variant. And I explained in detail that research to the nurse and said, please will you tell that patient she doesn't need her second shot? And the nurse said to me, I'm not allowed to tell the patient she doesn't need her second shot. So I said, okay, I accept that. Please will you just ask the patient just to come and see me in my office, and I will explain the science of why she doesn't need her second shot, because she is already immune to COVID. Shortly after that, I received a telephone call and a registered letter from Kamloops telling me that I was being fired from the emergency room. I was no longer, after having worked as an emergency room physician for 31 years with not a single complaint against me, I was fired for explaining to an emergency room nurse why a person who was already immune to COVID through natural infection didn't need to be vaccinated against it. There is something seriously wrong in Canada. The Hippocratic Oath is to do no harm, and I take it very seriously. So I set out to discover what it was that it was going wrong, because by that point, I had 6 people in my medical practice with serious neurological problems after their first COVID shot. I now have 10 people in my medical practice. We're now 11 months since they received their first shot. They got it in January of this year, 2021. I have 10 people in Lytton in my medical practice who are permanently disabled since their COVID shot in January. So I had sent a letter to Dr. Bonnie Henry back in April asking her what the mechanism of injury was for what was injuring my patients. And I asked her how I should treat this. As these people's doctor, what should I be doing? And the only answer that I got was to be referred to a vaccine safety specialist who assured me that none of the vaccine injuries that I saw in my patients could possibly be from these shots, that these were simply all coincidences. This was absurd, because of all the vaccine-injured patients in my medical practice, 85% of their injuries started within 72 hours of their shot. Yet I'm told that they're all coincidences. And I have sent 14 vaccine injury reports into Kamloops to that medical health officer that I was told to direct my questions to. And the response I get to all of them is that these are not from the vaccine. These vaccines are safe. They don't do that. These are just all coincidences. So the people who are supposed to be responsible for monitoring the safety of this experiment are vaccine injury deniers. They are not interested in safety. They have so believed the lie that these shots are safe that even when harm is caused, they refuse to believe it could possibly be it. Be from that. And they just say, no, these are coincidences. And I hear this over and over. I meet hundreds of people that come to tell me about their vaccine injuries. And they say that when they go to the emergency room, the doctors say, no, this, your heart attack or your stroke or whatever, your seizures or whatever you've got, your deficits can't be from these shots because we're told they're safe. Therefore, it can't be from the shots. This must be just another coincidence.
Welcome back. Again, you can agree or disagree with what he has to say, but everything he has been saying, he has documented. In fact, he gave a speech similar to this one before a group of physicians, and in the background, every single statement was followed by a peer review article you could download for yourself. Now we're going to go to the Academy of Ideas, a good group of people. Boy, do they do good work. And this discussion you're going to hear, and we'll hear about 10 minutes of it, is about, are we suffering from a mass psychosis? And is it more dangerous than the COVID virus in and of itself? You decide.
All one's neighbors are in the grip of some uncontrolled and uncontrollable fear. In lunatic asylums, it is a well-known fact that patients are far more dangerous when suffering from fear than when moved by rage or hatred. According to the psychologist Carl Jung, the greatest threat to civilization lies not with the forces of nature, nor with any physical disease, but with our inability to deal with the forces of our own psyche. We are our own worst enemies, or as the Latin proverb puts it, man is a wolf to man. In Civilization in Transition, Jung states that this proverb is a sad yet eternal truism. And our wolf-like tendencies come most prominently into play at those times of history when mental illness becomes the norm rather than the exception in a society, a situation which Jung termed a psychic epidemic. Indeed, it is becoming ever more obvious, he writes, that it is not famine, not earthquakes, not microbes, not cancer, but man himself who is man's greatest danger to man. For the simple reason that there is no adequate protection against psychic epidemics, which are infinitely more devastating than the worst of natural catastrophes. In this video, we are going to explore the most dangerous of all psychic epidemics, the mass psychosis. A mass psychosis is an epidemic of madness, and it occurs when a large portion of society loses touch with reality and descends into delusions. Such a phenomenon is not a thing of fiction. Two examples of mass psychoses are the American and European witch hunts of the 16th and 17th centuries, and the rise of totalitarianism in the 20th century. During the witch hunts, thousands of individuals, mostly women, were killed not for any crimes they committed, but because they became the scapegoats of societies gone mad. In some Swiss villages, writes Francis Hill, there were scarcely any women left alive after the frenzy had finally burned itself out. The totalitarian experiments of the 20th century are a more recent and a more deadly example of a mass psychosis. In countries such as the Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, North Korea, China, and Cambodia, it was a collective detachment from reality and a descent into delusions and paranoia that permitted the rise of the all-powerful totalitarian governments that destroyed the lives of hundreds of millions. The totalitarian systems of the 20th century represent a kind of collective psychosis, writes the medical doctor Joost Mierlo. Whether gradually or suddenly, reason and common human decency are no longer possible in such a system. There is only a pervasive atmosphere of terror and a projection of the enemy, imagined to be in our midst. Thus, society turns on itself, urged on by the ruling authorities. When a mass psychosis occurs, the results are devastating. Jung studied this phenomenon thoroughly and wrote that the individuals who make up the infected society become morally and spiritually inferior. They sink unconsciously to an inferior intellectual level. They become more unreasonable, irresponsible, emotional, erratic, and unreliable. and worst of all, crimes the individual alone could never stand are freely committed by the group smitten by madness. What makes matters worse is that those suffering from a mass psychosis are unaware of what is occurring, for just as an individual gone mad cannot step out of his mind to observe the errors in his ways, so too there is no Archimedean point from which those living through a mass psychosis can observe their collective madness. Or as Jung writes concerning the psychic epidemic that swept through Germany under Hitler's rule, the phenomenon we have witnessed in Germany was nothing less than an outbreak of epidemic insanity. No one knew what was happening to him, least of all the Germans, who allowed themselves to be driven to the slaughterhouse by their leading psychopaths, like hypnotized sheep. But what gives rise to a mass psychosis? And what makes a society susceptible to this devastating phenomenon? For an answer, we must begin at the basics. We must explain what is meant by a psychosis, and what leads an individual into a state of madness. With this information, we can then examine how this process plays out on a mass scale. A psychosis can be defined as a detachment from reality or the loss of an adaptive relationship to reality. In place of thoughts and beliefs that conform to the facts of the world, the psychotic becomes overrun by delusions, which are false beliefs considered to be true despite the existence of evidence that proves the contrary. Delusion, writes Joost Mierlo, can be defined as the loss of an independent, verifiable reality, with the consequent relapse into a more primitive stage of awareness. Delusions can take many forms. Some psychotics develop delusions of paranoia and believe they are constantly being followed, tracked, and observed. Others, such as catatonic schizophrenics, develop delusions about their ability to alter the state of the universe merely with the movement of their body, and so remain constricted in statue-like poses. But while delusions are false in the sense of not conforming to the facts of the external world, they are considered true to the psychotic and so influence how they interact with the world and with other people. Or as Jung writes, if a man imagined that I was his arch-enemy and killed me, I should be dead on account of mere imagination. Imaginary conditions do exist, and they may be just as real and just as harmful or dangerous as physical conditions. I even believe that psychic disturbances are far more dangerous than epidemics of physical disease or earthquakes. While a descent into the delusions of a psychosis has many triggers, such as an excessive use of drugs or alcohol, brain injuries or other illnesses, these physical causes will not concern us here. Our concern is with psychological, or what are called psychogenic triggers, as these are what usually lead to the mass psychosis. The most prevalent psychogenic cause of a psychosis is a flood of negative emotions, such as fear or anxiety, that drives an individual into a state of panic. When in a state of panic, one naturally seeks relief, as it is too mentally and physically draining to subsist in this hyper-emotional state for a prolonged period of time. To escape the fear and anxiety of the panic state, a positive or negative reaction can take place. And the positive reaction takes the following form. A greater effort is called forth, writes Jung. The individual will show more strength and willpower, and will try to overcome the obstacle or the cause of misery through physical, intellectual, and moral effort. If the strength of one individual is not sufficient, he will seek the help of others. If such an ultimate attempt fails, or if an individual is too weak from the start to show fight, then a negative reaction takes place. At the extreme, the negative reaction is a psychotic break. A psychotic break is not a descent into a state of greater disorder, as many believe, but a reordering of one's experiential world which blends fact and fiction, or delusions and reality, in a way that helps end the feelings of panic. Silvano Arrieti, one of the 20th century's foremost authorities on schizophrenia, explains the psychogenic steps that lead to madness. Firstly, there is the phase of panic, when the individual starts to perceive things in a different way, is frightened on account of it, appears confused, and does not know how to explain the strange things that are happening. The next step is what Arrieti calls a phase of psychotic insight, whereby an individual succeeds in putting things together by devising a pathological way of seeing reality, which allows him to explain his abnormal experiences. The phenomenon is called insight because the patient finally sees meaning and relations in his experiences.
I share that with you because there's a need at this time, in my opinion, to think deeper on these issues, to pull back to a neutral place before we make judgments, and not react at the limbic part of our brain, the primal part of our brain, which negates reason. This is a time when we need reason. With reason, you can have resolution in a positive way. And that's what we need more than ever. Time to call in and share your points of view. I've left a lot of time for WBI audience. It's 10 minutes. For the rest, it's 15 minutes. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And someone just sent me this clip. Now, it's an authentic clip. I just don't know the context, but it's interesting what he had to say. This is the head of the World Health Organization. Let's hear him. It's a short 10-second clip. Listen carefully what he says.
It's going to be used. It's better to focus on those groups who have risk of severe disease and death, rather than, as we see, some countries are using to give boosters to kill children, which is not right. It's going to be used.
Going to be used by some countries, the booster shot to kill children. Was it a slip? Was it something that we're not aware of? Which countries? Who's doing this? What proof do they have? That would be interesting, because the only people I know now who are questioning the validity of the vaccine for children who have a tremendous innate immune system and therefore are not susceptible to dying of COVID, all of the studies show that, all of them, all over the world. In fact, groups of scientists, 16,000 scientists alone in Great Britain, said, don't give children the vaccine. In fact, the statistics show that more children are dying from heart attacks, strokes, and embolisms because of the vaccine than from COVID. Then why? When the predominance of science, we say follow the science, and the real science says don't vaccinate children with this because they don't need it and there's harmful effects. And yet we push ahead as if no one has said a single word that's critical of this, and yet voices are being stilled. You do not see leading pediatricians, leading virologists, leading epidemiologists being invited on to the major networks to say, we're being told to vaccinate the children at all costs, clear down to 6 months of age. I'm wondering why he stopped then. You know, knowing Fauci, he would like to vaccinate when you're still in the womb. This man's a danger to society, but he's a hero to those in the woke culture, so he stays and will be deemed, let's say, non-punishable. He and Bill Gates, that's the power that money buys you. Just a thought. You heard it out of Tedros' mouth, the head of the World Health Organization. I'd like more context on it. Now we're going to see who's on the line and what's on your mind. And I have a lot more to share. But Paul from Florida. Hi, Paul. Your turn.
Yeah. Hi, Gary. Listened to you for many years. I have some questions I'd like to ask you privately. I know you've given out a contact, I believe, through email. Would you please give it to me so I can email some questions?
Yes, anyone can email questions or information that they would like to have read on the air. And because not everybody can listen live, it is prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com.
Oh, great. Okay. It's nothing that I want answered on the air. It's just concerns I have that I would like some information on. Thank you.
Okay. Well, tomorrow I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to give those who've had vaccines or booster shots and vaccines, if they want now, to ask, what can we do to protect our body, even though we've been vaccinated with the virus, part of the virus, what can we do so we don't end up being victimized? And why aren't all the people who have been injured and killed, why are we refusing to acknowledge that? Because part of what is proper informed consent is where a physician, a nurse, or a pharmacist, the three people most likely to give you a vaccine, they give you first an informed consent. Here are the side effects that we know of up to this point of the vaccine. So you read them. You say, I didn't know I could get Guillain-Barré. I didn't know I could get Bell's palsy. I didn't know I could get endocarditis. I didn't know I could have heart scarring. I didn't know all these things. I'll get it anyhow. Okay, fine. That's their choice. Or they can reject it. Or they could also be told there are options. You should be treated for any disease, no matter what it is, at the very beginning of knowing that you have a problem. And one of the great things about American medicine, and it is great, is that we had the best emergency medicine in the world. Meaning that if you have any emergency, if you've had a stroke, a cardiac arrest of some kind, if you have an acute problem, if you've been injured, if you've got a gunshot wound, if you've just almost drowned, if you've been electrocuted, all the things that could possibly happen to people and do, then we're most likely to save your life in American medicine, our emergency rooms. For that, I commend them. However, we fail miserably when it comes to chronic care, cancer, heart disease, arthritis, diabetes, obesity, mental conditions. We fail terribly. Look at the actual universal statistics. Let's just take the top 40 developed nations in the world. We're dead last in that. And yet, we keep bragging as if we're number one in everything. We're not. We like to talk about our exceptionalism in medical care. It's a disaster. Let me give you one example. One man in a hospital was treated, and he was released. And his bill came to, I believe it was around $15,000. But another person had to go in to intensive care for COVID, and his bill was $150,000. And another man died, but the bill was $1 million. Now, none of those people had insurance that covered that because we don't have universal health care. But hold on a second. Wasn't Obamacare supposed to be no one's left out of it and even pre-existing conditions and everybody's covered? No, it wasn't. At the time, if you remember, I was against Obamacare for two reasons. A, because it wasn't universal health care, which I support and believe in, meaning everybody is covered no matter what happens. You're sick for any reason, you need emergency care, you go to the hospital, you don't pay a penny. That's what a civilized nation that is based on moral principles of helping those who are suffering would engage in. What would it cost? About $1.6 trillion a year. What does it now cost? $3.5 trillion a year. But most of that is wasted. Administrative fees, for-profit hospitals, private clinics or doctors who sold their practices to hedge funds, equity partners, or venture capitalists who then buy up all of the doctors' practices and fold them into a for-profit business. It's no longer the doctor and you and with some floating scale. I know doctors that will charge a patient based upon what they can afford. These people, these are blood in the water, great white sharks. They're going to squeeze every penny they can out of you. But why not go for something where everyone's helped, where you can also avoid all of the excess testing, avoid all the litigation by having universal no-fault health and health liability insurance, where a general pool pays for it, because we're not that civilized. We're like a bunch of wild hogs that have come upon a root vegetable garden. There's going to be nothing left. But we have Democrats and Republicans who promise. Yeah, they promise every day, and they deliver bupkis. So, just letting you know that until we're intelligent, sincere, and committed enough to say no to our existing system and yes to universal care, we're going to continue to be exploited. And what euphemisms they mouth, they don't deliver. All right? So I believe that there are people who want now to help minimize what happens when the body starts to overproduce antibodies. And that's exactly what it is. In the most simplest terms, and I'm sorry to oversimplify it, but a lot of people in this audience don't have any science background, so I want them to understand as well. When you put a spike protein, how many spike proteins? Well, how about the last study I read this morning was 40 trillion. 40 trillion spike proteins in one vaccine goes into a person's arm, but it doesn't stay in the arm. Oh, but we were told it does, but it doesn't. It goes all over the body. And then it latches on to these ACE cells. And then, but what if I took ivermectin? Ah, ivermectin would lock onto that and displace the spike protein. So prophylactic ivermectin is one way of protecting myself against the SARS spike protein. Yes, especially when it's from a vaccine where you're getting a lot of it. Yes. But what if I already have an autoimmune disease? My immune system is already overreacting. Well, now you just put that overreacting immune system on steroids. Every vaccine you get is going to wane probably in about 30 days. So whatever so-called protection it's going to give is come and gone. Had you taken vitamin D and C and zinc, quercetin, and ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, you would have given yourself far greater protection, but we're not into protection. We're not into prevention. That's not where the money is. It's in the remdesivir drug that kills a lot of people, and someday they're going to be sued on that for wrongful death and the vaccines. So now Israel's up to their fourth vaccine, fourth. So these are already older people, and they're 100%, most of them are 100% vaccinated. But now they don't have the same privileges of being able to go into certain places based upon the new principle going on there, that you've got to have your two booster shots or it doesn't count. You mean I got to start all over again? Yes. But I'm an older person, and I've got multiple comorbidities. Wouldn't that hurt me? Of course it would. But we're official science, and here's the media we control, and so do what you're told. But what happens when my immune system collapses because it's producing antibodies 24/7 and it's already exhausted, and I'm not doing anything healthy because you told me not to do anything. You told me to go home and wait until my lips turn purple, and then I got to go in and get an expensive treatment that frequently doesn't work. That's the reality you're faced with. So I'm going to give you an antidote to that all tomorrow. It's going to take most of the program. I'm going to read slowly, but I'm going to give you a lot of protocols created by some very intelligent scientists and physicians that will help everyone who has been vaccinated already. Okay, we'll take another call. Who do we have up? Kathy from Virginia. Hi, Kathy, your turn.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for all your protocols. They have helped me and so many people so much. I've done really well in the pandemic. I have not been sick except for a short period of time where I think I probably did have COVID, but it wasn't really bad, obviously. And I had a blood test about a month later, and nothing showed up that I had had it. And I would love to know if there is any way to actually show that people have had it and survived and done really well. I'm nearly 70 years old.
Okay, this is an important issue you're raising, because this very issue at 6 o'clock this morning and again last night at 11 o'clock with Richard Gale, my producer, because he and I work late hours, we tried to understand this because we're seeing it more and more, where people have gotten sick with all the symptoms of COVID, but because they had a very strong immune system to begin with, and because they knew what kind of protocols to do, I mean, real high doses of vitamin D, and I won't give you amounts, but high doses, vitamin C, quercetin, astragalus, echinacea, podiarco, black cumin seed oil, curcumin, intravenous vitamin C, ozone. They were able to knock it out. Infrared saunas knocked it out. So 1, 2, 3 days later, they're normal. Now, 3 months later, they go in, because they want to go on a flight and show that they have natural immunity, and it tests negative. Both negatives. So that's a question. And you think, well, how did that happen? So we began to study this. And based upon my own experience working with people's immune system, I came up last night with a hypothesis. Mind you, what I'm about to say is merely the best insight that I can give at this moment, but it's not complete, and it may not be accurate. But I believe that there is something that we have been missing all along. For want of a better word, I'll call it super immunity. A super immunity is so strong that the body is able to destroy the antigen, bacterial or viral, whatever it may be, relatively quickly and completely. And because the immune system is always on full alert and is at full capacity, it does not always register the antigen as an antibody marker. Now, because a 96-year-old gentleman and his wife, who I've been working with for 40 years, and he has advanced Alzheimer's, and yet he has cognition, full cognition, memory, dances, laughs, answers questions. He is just right on. And it's also because his wife has been his guide this whole time. They called me, and they said that they both got COVID. They were very sick for a short period of time. And then I suggested some additional medical protocol. They took it, and lo and behold, they just got tested. They have they tested negative on both. They shouldn't, but they did. And this is not the only ones. I'm hearing from other people as well. So I believe we have a new phenomena that we must start to pay attention to and try to unravel it. Do we have all the answers? Not at all. Do we have something that's unique that needs exploring? Yes, we do. It is known as an idiopathic question, meaning of unknown origin. But I believe that part of it is, how strong was your immune system to begin with? And what did you do to strengthen it even more? Because the majority of people who've gotten COVID, I'm willing to bet most of them didn't even know they had it. And that's what we're finding. And that means that their immune system was strong to begin with. Now, maybe they may record themselves. But then at what level are they recording it? How many repetitions are they making of that PCR? Because just in 2 weeks now, in less than 10 days, the FDA officially will eliminate the PCR test that they've been using for the last 2 years to determine if a person is COVID positive. I'll get more into that on an upcoming program. So the question is, then are you telling us that all the millions, hundreds of millions of PCR tests you've done could end up being false positives, and the so-called case numbers were completely overblown by about 90% because the epidemiologists, including Nobel Prize winners from around the world, are saying that the overall death rate in the world and by country was not excessive compared to just measuring COVID. For example, we lost all numbers of flu. Now, you don't have to be an epidemiologist or a public health scientist to realize you can't have 60,000 people dying last year in the United States from flu, for example, and then this year, none. You can't go to zero. Canada, none. Great Britain, none. Where'd they go? You mean you move the flu deaths over to the COVID deaths? You mean some of the heart attack deaths, the cancer deaths? They were testing people as dying from COVID in hospice care who had been there with terminal cancer. That's how corrupt the science is. So you see, we need new biological markers with accurate tests that will determine, were you infected? Are you infected? What's your natural immune status? And until that has been standardized, then we're walking in the dark on this. Okay, good for you. Follow the advice, and let's keep ourselves healthy. We're out of time, everyone. Whole lot more coming tomorrow. And remember, tomorrow I'm going to be giving a way to counter some of the adverse effects of the vaccines that the government, as you heard Dr. Hoff say, all these dozens of people sick, some dying, they said it couldn't possibly be. That's a person's belief. Science is not about belief. Science is about proof. And almost all of our science today involving COVID is a politicized, weaponized, ideological belief. Have a nice day, everyone.